All right, Investor Plus is officially live, and it's everything you've been waiting for.
We're talking AI power networking to connect you with other investors who are serious about building their portfolio, not just dreaming about it.
You'll get access to Market Master Her, our step-by-step ebook that'll help you master any market, and an on-demand real estate fundamentals course that'll help you build your confidence. And nationwide chapter access, exclusive discounts worth over $6,000, and a 21-day meditation guide because, hey, balance is key. Have you ever faced a moment in your investing journey where you knew you needed to pivot, but you're unsure how to do it?
Today, we're sitting down with Chancy Pham. She is a seven-figure flipper, a broker that manages over 300 agents, a TV host, a turnkey provider who pivot multiple times. She is going to break down how she went from having an idea to building a very successful business.
Welcome to the Investor Podcast. I'm Liz Faircloth.
And I am your co-host, Andressa Gadelli. Accepting change is sometimes very difficult for some real estate investors. In many, many occasions, pivoting is not on the plan. It's not a choice. You have to have it. Shanti, for you, how would you recommend women that are in that situation to think and analyze the best way to proceed?
I think that setting our egos aside is probably the biggest element to doing that. So we tend to get married to these ideas and our businesses become our babies and we are nurturers by nature. And we hate to abandon these ideas because we have these, almost maternal instincts toward them, right? And I think that if we start leading with solving problems rather than our ego, it makes it a lot easier to pivot in our businesses. And you stop thinking about the fact that you are abandoning an idea or business that you set out to, to really scale and make this thing, and really just start focusing on where the problems are, and looking at those problems as opportunities. And that's exactly what I've kind of done in my business.
And you've done it multiple times, right? So we want to talk a little bit about those moments, but let's go back to when you were 13, right? And you shared something with us, and I love this because for so many different reasons, right? You snuck out of the house with your boyfriend, got caught by the cops after the curfew and got taken home. This started my journey on thinking strategically. And I realized from the outcome of the situation that I could sell and about the power of influence. And I never looked back. So I love that because on one hand, you could look at that as a parent going, she looked at it strategically and she also got in trouble, right? And then you could look at that in a few different ways, but tell us more about how this 13-year-old experience kind of shaped your future and who you are today.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm from a really small town in East Texas called Texarkana. We have a curfew ordinance. So after 10:30, anyone under the age of 17, you get a curfew violation ticket. I'm 13. I'm, what 13-year-old girls do. I have a little bit of an older boyfriend, sneak out of the house. We get caught at the park. And he's 17. So he gets to drive his raggedy beater car home. I get taken home by the cops. And the entire time that I'm in the back seat of the cop car, I am selling the cop because you have to understand I was a straight A student. I was really, really smart. And I was on the debate team, went to state and won. So I was an arguer, just by nature. So I'm selling the hell out of this cop in the back seat about how good of a student I am and how he should just let me out at 2 o'clock in the morning at the stop sign instead of actually taking me home. And he thought about it and he paused and he stopped. And then he said, you know what? I have a daughter and I would want someone to bring her home, but I'm going to go up to the door. I want you to hang back. So he goes up to the door and I hear this man lie to my parents for me. And he tells my parents that I was just hanging out at the park with some of my friends. We were doing what kids do, go easy on me, but that he still had to write the ticket. So he writes the ticket. My mom is pissed. She, over the next 2 or 3 weeks while we're waiting to go to court, looks at me with just disgust every day. You cost me money, you know. And so I sprung into action during this time because I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to make this a loss. And so my 13-year-old self went to the library. I pulled up articles on Yahoo about how curfew ordinances were totally ineffective, how they didn't help anything. I went and got letters of recommendation from all of my teachers, from my principal. I got copies of all of my report cards. And the day that we showed up to court, we're standing in front of this judge and he, you know, starts talking to my mom and she's about in tears, you know, and I pull out of my backpack a manila folder and it has all of this stuff in it. And the judge opens it up and looks over his glasses at my mom and says, "Do you know what you have? Do you know what you have in this girl here?" So long story short, he throws out my ticket and he assigned me to be the prosecuting attorney of Teen Court, which was an organization where teenagers act in the capacity of the legal system as defense attorney, prosecuting attorney, the jurors. And we get to decide for our peers what their punishments are for, you know, curfew violations, minor in possessions, little things like that. And so in that moment, I understood what my power was. If I didn't just succumb to my circumstances, I could have easily sat in the back of that cop car and said, "Holy hell, I'm in trouble. You know, like I'm grounded. Like that's it. You know, my mom's going to have to pay this $300 ticket." But I had in my mindset that I did not want her. We're not in a financial position for her to pay that. I wanted to figure out a way out of that. And I think at a very young age, because I took that bad situation and turned it into something that was completely different that I didn't expect, that set my mindset to where it is now, to where I don't care what happens. I'm not afraid. I'm going to overcome it. I'm going to figure out a solution to beat it. And I've been like that since I was 13 years old.
All right, let's take a breath, everybody. That are listening. This took a turn. Nobody expected that. And I think that this is a very memorable example of not taking the situation as like your life sentence. And this is what it is. What can I do? Right? Many times market shifts, regulations, local regulations for short-term rental shifts. And then I hear a lot of people getting stuck into that victim mindset. Oh, this is happening to me and I don't know what to do here. I always say, listen, you're not a freaking tree. Right. You can move. You can shake it around. You're a human being. You have
everything.
I've
never heard that one from you. I like that. You're not a tree. I never heard that one from you.
Yeah. No, I did, never told you you're not a tree. Never had to tell you. I always say you're not dead fish to go with the flow.
Yeah,
you're not a
yeah.
tree that you cannot move.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
and yeah. I'm seeing it. You have two legs, two hands, a brain, and a mouth. This is great.
Yes.
Like I love seeing what this 13-year-old girl, yeah. like how powerful. And I think I'm going to read for all of you here a little bit, because we don't have time to read it all, but a little bit of all the other things that you have done. And we can break down how you implemented those pivoting moments to grow your business and empire, right? So house flipper, over seven figures, a realtor with your own brokerage, managing over 300 agents. You leverage a unique opportunity in building a turnkey service after being a TV host. And you always say, listen, this is now you saying, you have built an empire by doing things your way, because playing it safe is for people who don't want to win. So the question to you is, how did you overcome the fear? Fear always exists, right? But how did you overcome the fear of pivoting in business?
I was never afraid of it. I think that's how I was able to pivot. I was never afraid because from a very, very young age, I always looked at problems as opportunities. Sure, I've had some scares. Being an investor, you have a bunch of money out there. You're exposed. You know, there have been times where I'm, holy crap, you know, what's about to happen? But in terms of being afraid to shift, I've never been afraid to have to pivot. Because in all of those moments where, there was some uncertainty, which is typically what we're afraid of, right? Is the uncertainty. We don't know what's on the other side. All that I did was simply look at some opportunities, and then out of that sprang these new business ideas that, you know, were better than what it came from. And so I would say that because I don't operate from a place of ego, because I don't look at myself as a tree, and because I'm extremely ADHD, and I wake up every morning with a new freaking business idea, that for me, seeing these changes that are naturally going to occur in our businesses and in the market, for me, it gets me excited. When everyone else is running out of the fire, I'm running into it because I know that with that change comes a ton of opportunity. And so it's never really been fear about me. It's really just been the fact that I think I'm a little bit crazy and I just jump, and then figure it out. And so that's kind of how I've pivoted along the way with all of these businesses.
And there's opportunities everywhere. And so you're on this TV show, walk us through what happened. And then you get this idea for this turnkey service, right? So walk us through that process. Because what I want women to listen to and everyone listening is there's opportunities right in front of us right now, right? But we don't always see them. So walk us through where you were, how this TV show is unfolding, and how this turnkey service kind of came about.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this turnkey service was something that we were thinking about doing before the television show approached us. So we were flipping, before the television show approached us, about 15 houses per year. The show approached us and our contract said that we needed to give them like 20 to 25. But they didn't really give us a time frame. And what ended up happening is very quickly they would come to us and be like, "Do you have those 8 houses done?" Like within a month. And we're like, you guys,
clearly you watch a lot of HGTV shows on like fast forward mode.
Yes. Like this isn't a real thing. And so at that point we said, okay, now is the time for us to do some of the things that we have always talked about doing, which is leveraging our skill set in the flipping business. And the fact that we had these duplicatable processes and all of these systems, we can use that and leverage that for other people without us having to expose, with all of our money and putting all of our money out there. And so we executed on this turnkey service. And so essentially, we built out a vertical, based on the flipping business. And so we just took all of the different elements of flipping houses. How do you find them? How do you fund them? How do you fix them? How do you furnish them? How do you flip them? And we turned that into a way to help other people that didn't have any experience in real estate, but had capital and wanted to increase that capital quickly, and took that as an opportunity where we could again leverage our expertise, but leverage someone else's capital. And so that's what we started doing. So, we didn't even make it really public. We started it out with, a couple of people and did them very small. And it was like a drug for them because they were able to, we find this property, we take it to them, we give them all of the analytics on it and the numbers. And they say yes or no, they want to take down the deal. And so then from there, so we found it, we're able to wholesale it to them. We are then able to loan them the money on it and do the hard money loan, or even white label it through and broker it through a different hard money company because we give them options. We're doing the full scope of work. We're doing the construction because now we've built out our own construction company. We've got the wholesale accounts on the materials. So now we're marking that up. We're, doing all of the design, and the design is built around all of those materials that we're able to mark up. We're, staging the properties. We're listing the properties with my agents, that I'm going to ultimately, make money off of that. So I was able to make more through this vertical process, because our clients then get 100% of their proceeds, but I'm now able to make more through this vertical process without using any of my money. It's virtually all profit. And then I'm able to take that profit and then leverage that to buying, my buy and hold properties and building out my portfolio. And so I was able to still do what I'm good at, but I was able to do it in a different way that was less risky and made more sense for us. So again, that pivot came out of a necessity of, the volume aspect for the television show, and also out of the necessity of us not wanting to have 15 projects going at a time and being that exposed.
So I want to break down that in a way that for all of you that are listening, you say, okay, in my situation right now, how can I apply that? Not necessarily the same scenario, right? But in your case, and correct me if I'm wrong, you look at, okay, what is my current situation? What are the gaps that I have, the problems that I need to solve? And what are the opportunities that I have? I'm sure you have different, you had at that time, different ideas on how to solve that problem. Walk through, how did you decide on going through, okay, we're going to go this route here regarding implementation of the turnkey service versus other ideas that you probably had during that time?
Because I knew that if we went this direction, we already had all of the tools and the keys to doing it. I think that when we get our backs up against the wall and it's time to pivot because of all of these different changes, that we think that we have to reinvent the wheel and just come up with this whole new business and business idea, when in all actuality, our expertise in what we're doing already and our processes already and in what we have are things that other people need. And so if we can just figure out who are those people that need what I already have and then leverage that, it makes sense. And so the quickest point, you know, from A to Z is to go straight. And if I know that I have all the letters in between and I just need to find somebody else that needs those dang letters, then I'm good. So the reason that we went with that was I knew that I could implement that business very quickly because I had all of the pieces to the puzzle. I just had to put them all together and then hand them off to someone else.
It's the path of least resistance, right? And so many times, so many people want to overcomplicate. So I love that. We always talk about, and Jess and I talked about this on a recent minisode of how do you mitigate your risk by not making so many changes, right? You literally are taking something. You took a new business and you had all the pieces of the puzzle. So many women are like, a new asset class, new geographical location, and a new strategy, right? So you're not mitigating your risk when there's a new and new. Versus it, okay, I'm in this area. I know this area. Where can I just make a pivot versus just all new? Because your exposure is higher. So my question to you is, as an idea person, and as a fellow person who has ADHD, what would you say are the, how do you mitigate your risks so that your ideas and your energy and your kind of like full blown, visionary energy doesn't, get you into more risk or, you know, you're ensuring that you're getting yourself in a good place. So how have you been able to mitigate risk based on your strengths and keeping an eye on your blind spots?
So I am really good at being a visionary, but I also am somewhat of a process engineer. So while I have these ideas, I don't just automatically think, let's implement it. I build out a business, the complete business in my brain before I implement it. And that has helped us mitigate risk. And then I also have my husband, who is, an extreme type A. He's going to poke all the holes. He's going to, you know, but before I even take him an idea, I've almost built it out to scale. I pre-build out all of my ideas and businesses from just an inception to where it can be in 5 years. And look at all of the pieces and all of the players and all of the risk. And before I even take it any further, I've built that out. And I think that that's a huge issue that people have. Not too long ago, I was talking to one of my real estate mentors and he told me that, you know, with every idea that you have in every business that you start, if you can't hand it to someone in a folder, and they pick it up and you go on vacation, then it's not a business. It's not an idea and it's not something that you should even be thinking about or presenting. And so I take that with me as I have all of these crazy ADHD ideas. I build it out first and create a duplicatable process in business that I could hand to someone that knows nothing about it before I decide if that's something that I should actually, you know, put some money into.
I think that would differentiate a lot of who are the ones really committed to make things happen from those that just have ideas and dreams.
Ideas are easy.
What it could be.
Yeah. ideas are freaking easy. Like I have ideas every day. If I acted on all of them, I'd be broke as hell. So ideas are easy, but really like sitting down and for me, that's the fun part. Of being a visionary, like the initial idea, like that's the easy part, but really getting into it and getting into the nuts and bolts of how I can actually make this a thing, is the exciting part for me. Because I'm also never just thinking about how this particular business can make me money while I'm working in it. I'm thinking about building it out so that I can even sell the whole damn idea to someone else. And that make me money. And so thinking about things, you know, in a broader perspective, I think is what really helps catapult us, with a lot of the businesses that we've started.
I want to highlight what you just said, because many times we build businesses that are just another job for ourselves. So always looking, Liz and I, as we are growing our businesses, we're always looking, okay, how can I fire myself from this position in the future? So that position has to have a title, has to have a scope of work, whatever. Whoever is doing it needs to understand the KPIs and everything that involves, so we can fire ourselves from that. Otherwise, we're stuck in there, another job. And then we complain we don't have the time to do it. So for all of you that are listening, right, you're in a situation right now where the market has shifted. Demand, supply, depending on where you go, is great. Depending on where you go, is like, ah, not so much. Whatever that situation might be that is different from what you have done before, it's always an opportunity for you to evaluate your business as a whole and what you truly want out of investing, that it's more than building a portfolio and having doors, right? What life you want to have out of it, and build the business based on the life that you want. One thing that I want to ask you based on your last, the last time that you pivot, mistakes, right? What you didn't know then that you know now that you could share with us?
Ooh. Mistakes.
We love horror stories.
So, our last pivot was from, you know, being basically full-time flippers and, you know, building out our doors, to, you know, kind of our turnkey business. And so we went from being flippers, and creating a product and building out our portfolio like everyone else to almost being a service-based business. And I think that the horror in that is working with other people and understanding, as you're pivoting into service based, that everyone, even though on paper they may look like they're your ideal client, they're not. And especially when you are working in higher stakes businesses like real estate investing. I would say, and I have to, you know, be politically correct here because I'm service-based now. I think that it's very important to vet your clients. Just because they have the money to do it doesn't mean that they necessarily have the temperament to do it. Doesn't mean that they're not completely risk-averse. Because again, you have to remember, we're taking people that may have been a retired judge or had sold a business years ago, or, you know, was a retired mailman that had $300,000 sitting in a money market account that wants to get more than a 7% return on it. And then we're taking a chunk of that money and we're finding a property for them and we're flipping it. And then they're getting those proceeds hands off. But a lot of these folks are very risk averse and it freaks them out. And so I would say that was probably the biggest issue that we had in pivoting, is just understanding, you know, that less could be more, working with clients that had the right temperament, but less of them, clients that are not risk averse, but less of them, instead of bringing on 15 or 20 clients that just simply have the capital to buy into the idea. So that was our biggest mistake.
People, right?
All goes back to people
and understanding people's behaviors and ways of being, right? You're dealing with people that have been successful in other areas, and you might assume, oh my gosh, of course, this is like no brainer, and they make it more complicated than you should, because it's a new area for them. But for those of you listening, I want to bring it up. If you're not in a service oriented, if you're a real estate investor, I want you to also implement the same thing that you just heard here when you're hiring your attorney, your CPA, your bookkeeper. You need to understand how risk adverse is your CPA, your bookkeeper, your attorney, how aggressive or how their style, all the way around. And I completely agree with you when you say that even though they have the money to participate, not necessarily people qualify. It's not a good match. It's not that the person is wrong or good or bad. It's like, are we a good match? Are we a good match? And sometimes I feel that we tolerate mediocrity from people that we're paying to support us, attorneys, bookkeepers. And I encourage all of you that are listening to do like a little inventory and say, okay, would they qualify for the next phase of my business and who I am? Did you have to fire people in your life?
Yes. Before you can even get the question out. Absolutely. I've had to fire people.
If you said no, we would be shocked, you know?
Yes. And I had to learn to not take it personally. And not only did I have to, you know, fire people, but I had to learn a big lesson in creating boundaries with some of these people. We oftentimes feel like because, you know, we're paying someone or they're even paying us, that, or they're investing in us and they're, you know, they're passive investors that we, have to be subjected to, certain behaviors and attitudes. And like, I don't. And so learning to create those boundaries in this world, of investing and even, you know, service-based businesses, I think is really, really important. So yeah, I fired people, I've set boundaries and I've broken up some relationships.
And those things are hard, but they're necessary. And they're not just necessary for you. It's actually for your, like it's for, Justin and I say this all the time, it's for us to get to that next level, right? And if you're not doing that, you're not firing clients and it's hard, right? Because you're like, these are people paying us money, but it all has to align. And as people think about temperament, think about personality. That matters, right? In all of this. What opportunities have came up for you as a result of pivoting? So we're always like pivoting is going to be, could cause some stress and transition. It's like, ooh, it's a little angst around it.
I feel there's a negative. I don't know if it is
sometimes
because
a negative.
English is not my first language, but the association that I have is that pivot, it's something more energy, more towards the negative side versus the positive side. And I don't think that should be the case.
No.
Am I interpreting the word incorrectly?
No, I'm on the same page. So the question for you is like, what opportunities have happened that have been unexpected or have even been more positive than you were anticipating from your pivot, especially the turnkey opportunity you shared with us?
I mean, it's so many. I can't even name them all. So now because essentially we are operating where we have created a business out of segmented businesses, then naturally more opportunities are going to come, right? So at first it was just, okay, I'm finding deals. I've got the money and the funding of the deals. I've got the money and the construction, but then came the materials and then came, okay, well, I have wholesale connections to the materials, but then came connections direct to suppliers, direct to manufacturers. And then came opportunities for businesses beyond that that I'd never even thought about, you know, partnerships in manufacturing, you know, overseas in different countries, you know, foreign relationships. Then came, you know, opportunities of people loving the model so much that they want to purchase it and scale it. And, you know, it's been, kind of a whirlwind, you know, and now has even come partnerships with, the property management side to do the same thing with not only just flipping, but for rental properties as well, which, you know, I think there are a couple of, other services out there that do it on the rental side, but I don't think that there are any that in-house do all of it. And so we've, you know, kind of gotten that opportunity now on the table. And so, It went from me being a realtor to me getting my husband to quit his job and open our investment company to then me going full time, with my husband, on the investment side, to then television, to then this turnkey model to now we just have so many ancillary services and verticals going on, verticals off of verticals, that it is, I am nowhere where I thought I would be when I got my real estate license back in 2016 to get some extra money so that we could ball out at Disney World. which was essentially how all of this started. And so I would definitely say take that pivot and take that leap. But do your due diligence and build it out first on paper, and pursue it, because it can really bring some crazy opportunities.
God, there's so many more questions. We'll have to have you back on at some point. This is, but we really, really appreciate your insight. And I think it's about that one step forward. Yeah. And really putting yourself first, like unapologetically, like, I know I can do this. Like, you were that 13-year-old with the manila folder. Everyone listening has those moments, and we forget them. We forget them. We get older. We get into our world as an adult, but we've all had those moments. As you were talking, I was thinking about a few moments for myself, right? And that's the moments to really shine and to like dig into and to highlight and to build upon. So this has been amazing. Chauncey, where can everyone listening learn more about you and connect with you?
They can just hop over to myrealestaterebel.com and learn everything they need to know about me there.
Awesome. All this information you guys can find on our show notes. Thank you so much again for being on our show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion, so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.